within the course of our study of halacha and business ethics, we'd like to study today two simanim in a sefer called Mishpatei HaTorah from Tzvi Spitz. The first is on Bava Metzia, Siman Nun Tes, and he addresses the question of someone who hires a professional, an employer, and there was no exact agreement on the amount of money he would pay. So we're dealing with halachas of Hilchas Schiris Polim, and the question is, how much does the employer have to pay the employee when the job is done? The case that came up involved a chain of stores, a very large chain, that hired the services of a Roech Heshbon, of an accountant, who was appointed for a, what we call a kablanut, a certain job. His job would be to present to the firm a balance sheet for the year, a mazan shnati, as we call it. The agreement between them was that the accountant would work in his personal study at home or wherever he works, in his office, and the amount of money that he would be paid, so the agreed payment would be $100 per hour of work. And after a month passed by, the accountant presented the product of his labor, and he received his payment in accordance with what they agreed. A year later, the administration of the same chain turned once again to this accountant, and a second time asked him to prepare for them the annual budget, a new one. And he went over the material, as he was asked to do, but there was never an agreement exactly how much he would be paid. When his work was complete, he calls up the administration of this chain of stores and tells them that he forgot by mistake to notify them that a half a year ago he was upgraded to a, because he got a different degree, a higher diploma. So now he's what we call a bachir, you know, he's a high level employee. And as a result of that, he has raised the charges for his work, and he gets paid $150 an hour. And therefore he is calculating his work per hour in accordance with that. The owner of the of this chain of stores responded to him in a kind of wishy-washy way. He didn't commit himself. He said, yeah, I heard, and we'll talk about it, we'll work it out, everything will be fine, we're not going to go to a rabbi, you know, those kinds of ambiguous phrases. 2 days later, when the accountant presented his work together with a bill which included a calculation of how many hours he worked, and he calculated the bill based on $150 per hour. His employer sent him a check for his work based on the number of hours that he had presented at the rate of $50 an hour. And the employer argues that since on the second time around there was no agreement between them from the start on how much he would be paid for his work, therefore he's being paid $50 an hour, which is the price in the market that you pay an accountant on the lower echelon. In other words, you can get an accountant for any amount of money, you know, there's no limit, but the basic fee for the cheapest accountant is $50 an hour. So that's what the employer is willing to pay, not more than that. On the other hand, the accountant is obviously claiming that his salary, his payment that's due him, is that much more than it was a year ago, because, as we said before, his charges went up in the last half a year. And therefore he understood that that was the nature of the agreement, And Aldas Kain Hiskim Lavo, this was his understanding of the payment scale for his work. And even though he didn't tell them at the very beginning, but he had told them towards the end, and he understood very well that they had agreed for those to those terms. Of course, he claims that he agreed to pass over to them the final yearly budget, balancing the assets and the deficits of the company, only because he understood from his discussion, most recent discussion with the owner of the chain of stores, that the owner would pay him as he had requested. If not for that, he would have left the accountancy work in his possession. He wouldn't have given it up until he would have been paid the last amount of money, the full amount of money. Now, before we see the response to this question, let's look into the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the sugya of a shliach. Although we're not dealing with a case of a shliach, the classical case of a shliach would be when the owner who's paying the bills and employing the employee appoints an agent to take care of hiring and firing on his behalf. Nevertheless, we'll see a very important ritva in the sugya Bava Metzia in Vav, which I think will shed a light on our particular case of the account. The Gemara says that shliach shesachar polim avur balabayis, the shliach representing the balabayis, hires workers, the omer lehem shescharam al balabayis, he makes it clear to them that the balabayis will pay their salary, they'll sign the checks, and he told me to hire you at 4 dinrim per day. The balabayis actually told him to hire at 3 dinrim a day. So it was the shliach who changed the conditions that were in the mind of the balabayis agreed upon. After the workers completed the job, the balabayis refuses to pay them 4 because he told the shliach to hire them at 3. And the Gemara establishes that if for such and such a work that these employees did, the going rate would be 4, then the balabayis would have to pay 4. Because that's the amount of benefit that he got, financial hanah that he received from these workers. And he cannot claim that, you know, he could have gotten 3 at 3, because nobody in the market hires themselves off at such a low rate. 4 is the bottom base value. However, the case in the Mishnah is where the polim in the marketplace would indeed work at 3. There are some workers that would only agree at 4. The shliach changed the agreement as the balabayis had instructed him to create. That's called shinui. And therefore, in the case of shliach sheshina, is batla shlichuso. The agent here has lost his status as an agent because he violated the will of the mishaleach, the one who sent it. He's no longer representing the boss. And therefore, as far as shlichus is concerned, the balabayis doesn't really have to pay anything. He didn't hire these workers at all. The shliach is no longer operating on behalf of the balabayis. The balabayis has to pay the polim under a different halach of hanah. How much did he benefit from their labor? And therefore, since he could have hired workers at the rate of 3, he doesn't have to pay anything higher than 3. So that's itself the fascinating sugya. Now, we want to look at the Ritva on that sugya. The Ritva writes that this law applies even if the Baal HaBayis himself had directly dealt with the workers, hired them face to face, and they had never agreed to a specific price that he would pay them, how much per job or per hour the two would agree, the Baal HaBayis and the poet. In such a case as the Ritva, even if most of the workers in the city would demand a price of four, since there are workers in the city who would be hired at three, and in this particular case the Poalim never agreed with the Baal HaBayis to pay a higher rate, namely four, therefore they, the Poalim, are considered Yodam al Tachtona. They have the lower power in this litigation. The Baal HaBayis has Yodam al Yona. He could say, look, I'm going to pay you the basic price that Poland would charge for this work, in this case three. And the reason for this is because the Baal HaBayis has the legal right to claim, since you, the workers, know that Kol Adam Dato L'Shalim Kama Shepachos, you understand the psychology that a person wants to pay his workers less than more, he wants to save his funds, and therefore, since the benefit that I got from you, from your labor, I could have obtained at three, I wouldn't have to pay more than three, therefore it's clear that from the beginning I hired you under the understanding that I would pay the lower price in the market, because the person wants to pay the lower price. You didn't make any condition and demand a higher wage. You agreed at three. Or I shouldn't say you agreed at three, because Lamaisa, there was no agreement on any particular amount of money. But since there was no specific specification of how high the wages would be, therefore the Baal HaBayis has the right to say, look, I'm not going to pay you based on any agreement that we had. I'm going to pay you based on the benefits that I got from your labor. And that's the baseline market value for wages. So the Ritva is really establishing the rule for any agreement which initially had no particular sum of money mentioned in terms of how high or low the wages of the workers would be. In our particular case, we have a slightly different situation, because since last year there was an agreement explicitly between the employer and this particular employee, namely that the account would be paid at the rate of $100 per hour. And that's exactly what the Baal HaBayis paid the accountant a year ago. Therefore, the question arises, since in the second year, when there was no agreement up front, how much the accountant would be paid in wages, should we assume, based on an umdana, that for sure the assumption was that the original sum on the first round would also apply in the second round? Or, alternatively, should we say that let's relate to the second year as a separate, independent year? And with regard to the second independent year, since there was no agreement, and we're not relating to the first year, then we can kick in, the Ritva's principle will kick in, that the Baal HaBayis will pay his workers based on the cheapest wages that it's possible to pay a worker according to the given market conditions for that work. And this is exactly what the employer is claiming in our case. And if I want to pay you the lower end, which is 50, because I could certainly find an accountant that works for 50 an hour. Now there's a similar case in the Tshuvas of the Rivash, which is Paskin, brought down by the Ramah in Choshe Mishpat Shin Lamed Gimel, and this is the language of the tshuva, shaliach tzibur shehiskir atzmo im manigeya ir l'shana b'tnai kach v'kach. So the shliach tzibur, let's call him a chazan, who signed an agreement in which he committed himself to serve as the cantor, and this agreement was signed with the leaders of the city who run the shul, and they pay the salaries, and there was an agreement with a built-in condition to pay X amount of money. The Akach Hiskir Atzmo Libnei Ha'ir Im Manhigim Shniyim. On a second round, he hired himself to do that kind of work, but in this case, it wasn't the original board of directors who hired him, but rather there was another group of people. Maybe they filled in for the first group, and there was never a condition that was mentioned explicitly between the maskir and the socher. Says the Rivash, Bevadei al tnai arishon hiskir atzmo. The agreement was certainly on the basis of the original agreement. V'dafke kishechazar v'hiskir atzmo v'shana shniya. Language implying that since there was no explicit agreement, then everybody assumes that last year's agreement is still in force. And as I said, the Rambam brings us down in Simon Shin Lamed Gimel, the Sma and the Shach there say that im niskar im amanhig rishonim, if the same group of people hired him again, then they know about the conditions of his agreement on the first round, and therefore we can assume that now the same agreement is understood, even though it wasn't spelled out. Getting back to our question, the question of the accountant and the Balabais, since the Balabais hired this very same accountant on the second year to produce the annual budget, it's definitely the case that their understanding, in this case the employer and the employee, was that the wages to be paid for this work would be subject to the same agreement that was made between them on the previous year. Even though in our case we're talking about kablanut, we're not talking about someone who's hired per day or per hour, but rather someone who's hired per job, nevertheless, there's no nafkamina ledina, because fundamentally the principle is the same in both. And we apply the rule of daitam haya, their das was kafuf lesikum shedu b'nei mavoros usugavoda. They had an agreement the year before how much would be paid for this type of work, at what rate, at how many hours. So therefore the assumption is that the same agreement applies now. And that we saw in the Rivash and the Shach. We'll find it similarly in the case of a rental agreement. Let's say there was a rental agreement to pay X per month. And now, at the end of the term of lease, the tenant continues to live in that apartment for another year, second year. And the law is stated that for sure we assume that they agreed, the maskir and the socher agreed on this rental exactly as they would have succeeded in agreeing on the first round. Bevadei al das hasikma rishon himshich. So the landlord has no right to pull a fast one and surprise the tenant and say, well, I'm raising the rent on you. I mean, he could do that mikan alav, but on the amount of time that he already lived, let's say he was there the second year, then there's no legal right to raise the rent retroactively. And therefore, the conclusion of our discussion is that since on the first round a year ago, it was established that the preparation of a balance sheet for the year's income and expenditures is worth $100 per hour of work. The accountant's been hired, and that's exactly how much money he was paid. Therefore, when this very same accountant is hired a year later, the second year, to prepare again a mazan shnati, as we spoke about before, then aldas kein niskar, meaning the implicit or tacit agreement is to pay $100 per hour to this attorney, even though they never explicitly mentioned this, but that's the nature of the agreement, and therefore both would have to agree, he, the Baal Habayis, to pay, he, the Roech Cheshbon, to receive the $100 per hour. The claim and the argument of the employee, the employer, that he should be paid according to the cheapest price in the market is not a correct taina, because since he committed himself to this attorney based on the previous year and that agreement, and the accountant agrees that he was paid last year that amount, but he has to raise his price, that claim to raise the price, that the wages should go up because he has now a better status, that has no relevance, that has no bearing or weight, because since he didn't say that to them, the accountant never stipulated in words, or certainly not in writing, that he was meant to get paid a higher amount, and therefore that the agreement was made on the basis of last year's agreement for $100 per hour. If the accountant had any havamina, any thoughts that he would want to get paid more, he would have to have explicated this in words and made such a condition from the outset that he would be willing to do the work at such and such a price, but not less. The attorney, in his claim that the Baal Habayis had said to him, "Oh, Nistader, we'll get it, we'll work it out, everything will be fine, we don't have to go to a rabbi for it," these words are not what's called a hischaivus or a mechuyavus. These words are not enough to indicate that there's an absolute commitment on behalf of the employer to pay the higher price of $150 an hour. This is what's called the Lashon HaShas Pitume Mili Bialma. You know, sometimes I say certain words in order to fluff it up, or in order to get you to agree. And therefore it's absolutely clear with regard to Misha Mishtadel B'dafka Lomer Dvarmu Polim, that somebody who works overtime to come up with incomplete and unclear words, there's no commitment here on the part of the Baal Habayis to pay any additional wages. Had there been such an agreement, then the Baal Habayis would have had to explicitly say, "Yes, I commit myself to pay you that high price," in this case, $150 an hour. So in general, with agents and a situation where you pay an agent for his services, when the agent forces his client, let's say he's buying something on behalf of his client, to sign, the client should sign a mismach, a document which commits him to pay the agent a higher wage than is usually assumed in the market and given those conditions at that particular time. And if that agreement is signed, then it's binding, and the client, the buyer in this case, will have to pay a higher commission fee. Now, often what happens is that the client will be very stubborn and he'll say he wants to get a break. You know, he's a good client, he's loyal, he's paid this mitavech, you know, this agent so much money in the past, he's had enough. So in such a case, when the client asks for a break in the price, and the agent says nistader, yebeseder, uses those unclear, ambiguous terms, then the law is, in such cases, there's no statement, no expression or declaration on behalf of the balabayit that he agrees to lower his prices, and therefore whatever it says in the legal document is binding. So just to summarize the last point, if the agent gets his client to sign a document, even though the client has insisted on getting a break, that's not written up in the document, and therefore it's not binding. What's written is binding. Let's go on to the second question. This is a tshuva in Siman Samach, a very sensitive issue that came up in Yerushalayim not so long ago, where a particular cheder that was pretty well known was in need of an educational director, what we call Menahel, to run that institution, to educate the young men, the boys. And in this particular case, they were having trouble finding the right guy, a person with wisdom and experience in this field of being a Menahel, of running a school. And they hired someone who would literally take over the school and run the school and be in charge of impacting on the students. The only problem is they found someone from Chutz Loretz who had a tremendous reputation. He was a very well-known educator in the United States, and they signed a 2-year contract with him. He's an individual who not only has a reputation as a great machanech, but he's also a Talmud Chacham of serious stature. And he's also considered one of the greats, one of the great experts in Chinuch, in the area of education. As a result of this contract, when the beginning of the new school year was approaching, this Mechanech, this Menahel, transferred everything that he had, his family, all of his accounts, everything was transferred to Yerushalayim, and they took a place, and that's where the family was living. But 3 months go by from the opening of the school year, and it becomes crystal clear to the administration of the Talmud Torah that this Menahel, with all due respect, doesn't understand the souls, the psychology, and the behavior patterns of students who were born in Eretz Yisrael, of Sabari. And therefore, it's gotten to the point where a number of students in the cheder have begun to make fun of this mechanech and of his general approach to chinuch. Now, we live in a world where if the students don't look up and don't respect the Menahel, then that's not going to engender a successful educational experience. So admittedly, the shitat chinuch, the approach to education that this particular machanech was professing actually was very appropriate for the students, the children in America, but it just didn't fit. It wasn't a good fit for the school, for the children in Israel. And as a result of this situation, the Talmud Torah is in such regression on a spiritual level that they don't know what to do. They're at loss. You know, there's no way that they can run the school successfully for another, well, the balance after subtracting three months is a year and three quarters. On the other hand, there was a contractual agreement between the community, I shouldn't say the community, we call it the school, and this particular scholar, this educational director from Chutz Loretz, for a 2-year contract, he, the educational leader, has given up all his work in Chutz Laretz in order to make Aliyah, to settle in Eretz Yisrael. He brought his whole family, and now they're telling him he's not fit for the job? So let's break down the claim and the counterclaim into a few component parts. On the one hand, there's a contract for 2 years to hire this mechanech, and therefore the mechanech is arguing that you don't have rights to fire him. On the other hand, the mechanech insists that he's done his maximum to the best of his knowledge and his experience to run the school according to the educational principles of the first level, the best level, and therefore there was no negligence on his part that would generate some sort of a license to terminate his relationship, his workload. And therefore, at the end of the day, if things are going sour in the Talmud Torah, in the Cheder, then that's called mazla gora. That it wasn't my mazel, it wasn't my need to fulfill a mitzvah that was goring. The reason why this situation arose is not because of the mazel of the mechanic, but the mazel of the Talmud Torah. They're in a bad situation, bad straits. But it's not my fault, says the mechanech. And therefore they have to continue to pay his salary and keep him on the payroll until the 2 years are over. But if they fire him in the middle of the year, his reputation is now at stake. He had built up over the course of decades a fabulous reputation as a mechanech. Now he's going to be rejected from a school. What will that do? What impact would that have on his reputation? And therefore, number one, in Eretz Yisrael, he won't find another work to substitute to change this one. And the possibility of going back to America is not really realistic. Number one, in the light of all the expenditures, the great amounts of money that he spent in order to get his family located in Eretz Yisrael, and then to bring his family back to Chutz Laretz is very difficult. His job in Chutz Laretz has already been filled by someone else, so it's not like there's something waiting for him there. And it seems that even in Chutz Laretz, even in America, he'll be left without a job. So here he gave up one job, he signed the contract for 2 years, relocated his family. On the other hand, understandably, the administration of the school, from its part, has no clear vision of what's supposed to happen here. Do they have to accept the argument of this menial that they hired? He's a special person, and he has a lot of tzedek, a lot of righteousness in his claim. Or should the administration perhaps listen to the parents who are clamoring to have this principal replaced? And even if we'll come to the conclusion that the administration has the right to fire this menial, do they have to pay what we call pitsuyim, severance pay, in order to make up for the great loss, financial loss, that this Rebbe is going to suffer, or has already begun to suffer? Can we do such a thing? And we force the school to pay severance pay. Because after all, look at all the losses that this menial is going to incur. Now, there's a Gemara in Baba Basra on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis that addresses the issue of what's called Oskim B'Meleches HaKodesh. You know, it's Melamdim who teach Torah. And the Gemara says that if they were Misrashel, they were negligent in the activity of teaching Torah to their students, they weren't careful about observing them, supervising them, then they violate, such a teacher violates a very severe Isur Torah, about which the Torah itself says Orer Ose Melech Hashem Rabia. So besides the universal halach of Gezel, which may or may not apply in the case of a teacher of Torah who took a salary and did not teach properly, the Gemara in Bava Basra states that the punishments on this violation are most severe. There's an opinion in the Gemara that Yoav, who is the Sar Tzava of David HaMelech, killed his Melamed because his Melamed was not teaching properly. And as a result of the error of his Melamed, terrible, terrible things happened. Now, we in our time would not use physical punishments in any way, shape, or form against a Menayel who's not living up to what our expectations are. The only arm that Beis Din would have in our time is not to punish the guy physically, but rather to demand that his work be terminated. And then the issue becomes a monetary issue. So therefore, Menahel Oshar Ovdim Heinom Rak B'Tchum HaKaspi, the power that the courts have over a teacher or over a principal would only be limited to the monetary aspect. Or perhaps seeing to it that this worker is fired. Chazal wanted to teach us how severe a violation it is to teach students in a way that's not proper, and a way of possibly having a long-term impact on the students. So that's why Chazal tell us how severe of a punishment there will be, because the mistakes and the ignorance that the children suffer from as a result of this Rebbe who did not teach them properly becomes, with time, an integral part of their essence, of their behavior pattern, of the way they think. Therefore, besides the Bittul Torah that this Rebbe caused to his students, but it's a lot worse than that, there's a damage that's irreversible as a result of his entire personality, his educational personality. And about this kind of situation where a teacher goes sour, I mean, he doesn't live up to his responsibility, Kohelis says, Ma'aves lo yuchal liskon. I mean, this is something that can never be fixed up. It's a permanent damage. There's no way out. It's irreversible. And therefore, if the facts in our case are being presented in such a way that we understand that as a result of the educator, in this case the principal, the educational principal with Talmidim is damaging them, then based on the Gemara Bava Basra, we certainly should conclude that the halacha would require, not only allow, but require that this principal be immediately fired. And that obligation to fire the principal exists despite the fact that this principal is not guilty at all. There was no hisrashlus, as we said before. And from his perspective, he did the best job he could. And there was no hisrashlus. So the issue here is not his guilt, it's not his negligence, but the reality of the fact that his approach to education and the results thereof are what should I say, tragic in terms of the impact it's having on the students. And if that is clear, then there's no license, there's no permissibility that he should continue to damage the students, not even one extra day. And therefore, based on the Gemara in Bava Basra, we conclude that the administration of this Talmud Torah would have to fire him immediately. And to explain it a little further, this Talmud Torah, with its staff of teachers and its administration, and this is true, by the way, for any educational institution, whether it be for boys or for girls, is designated for the purpose of teaching the students. I mean, anyone who's in charge of the school has one and only one charge, and that is to see to it that the students are being taught properly. Yeah. However, in order that they work properly, in order that the system is in place educationally, the teachers need a parnasa. They have to be paid. And therefore the school has to live up to their agreement to pay that salary which should be paid, but only on the condition that the system is working, meaning that the teaching of Torah is actually being achieved. If that's not happening, then now that the Talmidim need to be taught, and the situation of the student should not be used to support this menahel. In other words, to say that because of the financial loss of this menahel that will be caused by the termination of his employment, therefore the student should have to suffer, and he should not be fired, that's not justified. So in answering of our question, if the facts of this particular scenario are true, then the administration of this Talmud Torah must immediately fire the educational director of the school. Now, as far as the educational director's claims to be paid because there's a contract agreement, then if we could find another work, an alternative job for him in the Talmud Torah, for example, perhaps he could give private lessons, or he could do other works that could integrate into the school system without his causing any damage to students, then we have to allow him to do so. If we cannot find any substitute kind of work for him in the Talmud Torah, but again, emphasizing that he's not guilty in any way of any negligence in his role of running the school, it's just that there was a mistake in which there was no cheshbon here. Nobody thought out from the start the possibility that he, the educational director, would not be appropriate for this school. Therefore, the hanhola, technically, according to strict law, does not have to pay any severance pay after they fire him. Again, the Rebbe, from the educational director, from his point, was not negligent, but the administration of the Talmud Torah was not negligent. Again, if we could prove that there was negligence on the part of the Anhala, that would be a different story. But since there was no negligence on anyone's part, then according to the strict law, they don't have to pay. However, even though that's true according to the strict law that they don't have to pay, nevertheless, they have to make every effort possible and not leave any leaf unturned to try to find some work for this menahel who's being fired, some sort of educational work in a different institution that might be appropriate for him, or at least to offer him some severance pay, something that we call a schum hagun, some amount of money that's fair, that would facilitate, that would allow him to live with his family for at least a number of months until he finds a different work, a different job, whether it be in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz Laretz. The monies are coming from what we call Kaspe Hegdesh. In other words, any money that's owned by a Talmud Torah is called Kaspe Hegdesh. It has a special status of kaspei tzedakah. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. In this case, since the menahel was not negligent, we should use those monies, if they're available, to give him some sort of a pitsui that would allow him time to get his act together, his family support, and get until he finds another job. And that would be the right way of using kaspei tzedakah and hekdesh in situations similar to this one. And in order to appreciate the source material for this psak, we would have to go through not just the sugya Bava Basra that we mentioned, but also the Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Ayin Zayin, and the Shulchan Aruch Kol Shig Mishpat in Siman Shin Lamed Dalet, that establishes the halacha that in any case of an onus, in other words, the balabais, the employer, had some sort of situation beyond his control in which, as a result of that situation that arose, he has to terminate the relationship with his employee, and he has to cancel the work that was ordered. For example, the Gemara has a case which is brought down in Shulchan Aruch where there was an agreement made with a ganan, who's a gardener in charge of irrigating the fields, and all of a sudden there was an unforeseen storm, a rainstorm, in which the entire garden is almost flooded with water. There's no need for his work as to irrigate the fields, to water the gardens, is necessary. But if the gardener claims that he had another piece of work for the employee, in this case the gardener claims that he had another job offer for that day, and he gave up that offer because he was committed to do the job for this particular balabais, therefore as a result of terminating his job, he suffered a loss, a financial loss, because he lost another opportunity, and he demands that he be paid as a poel batel, which means he should be paid as someone who, instead of getting the full salary, will get a fraction of his salary, the amount that's paid for someone who does no work at all. So then the law is that if the cause that led to the situation of his being fired, so to speak, of terminating his relationship was something shchiach, it was something that you could foresee, it's quite common. Let's say it was a winter, cloudy winter day, and the balabais and the pole both could really entertain the possibility that it might rain, and therefore the work would be cancelled. In such case, no one's really a poshea over here. And there would be no obligation on the part of the balabais to pay kipol bata. So without going into all these details, which have to be studied very carefully, and maybe we'll pick that up at a different time, the situation of the mechanic would have to be analyzed in terms of kipol bata from that perspective. Okay, we'll stop here, and B'li Neder, we'll try to pick it up next time.